Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never change anything.
Thank you.
on It's My House, we're going to cover a topic, chemtrails. The real story of chemtrails. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, and we're still working on trying to get him on this live stream. All right, today's podcast is Chemtrails, The Real Story. If you got a comment on chemtrails, give us a call at 619-768-2945. Press 1 if you want to contribute to the discussion. And we'll be right back with that after we hear from Steve Harvey.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now, the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Okay, that was a group known as the Ohio Players out of Dayton, Ohio. Today's topic, chemtrails. The real story, 619-768-2945 is the number. If you got any comments on chemtrails. Now, I'm going straight. I'm going off the internet, Wikipedia. All right. If you type in chemtrails, that's spelled chemtrail, chemtrail. It'll come, well, at least what I'm reading. Chemtrail conspiracy theory. Okay. The chemtrail, and this is not my words, I'm reading this off of the free encyclopedia known as Wikipedia. The chemtrail conspiracy theory persists the erroneous belief that long-lasting condensation trails are chemtrails. Now, I need to make a very important point here. What we see in the sky, you know, those white trails, those are known as condensation trails. All right. They're not chemtrails. They're called condensation trails. Now, let's go into what is a condensation trail. And they're correctly termed as contrails. One word, contrail. They're contrails, not chemtrails. Now, you can type in contrail in any search engine on your phone, laptop, but whatever the electronic, and let's look this up. All right. Contrails, also known as vapor trails, are line-shaped clouds produced by the aircraft engine exhaust that changes in air pressure, typically at aircraft cruising at altitudes several miles above the Earth's surface. Contrails are composed primarily of water in the form of ice crystals. The combination of water vapor and an aircraft engine exhaust and the low ambient temperatures that exist at high altitudes allows for the formation of the trails. There's a period on that. All right. Impurities in the engine exhaust from the fuel, including sulfur compounds, which is 0.05% by the weight of the jet fuel, provide some particles that can serve as sites of water droplet growth in the exhaust. And if water droplets form, they might freeze and form into ice particles to compose a contrail. Now, many of us that are listening to this live stream, we've been on airplanes, and you'll typically hear the pilot say, you know, we're going to go up to, they typically turn off the seatbelt like around maybe 10,000 feet above ground, and then they get to a cruising altitude of maybe 30,000 feet or more. But let's say 35,000 feet. Okay. Now, you can look this up to yourself. What is the outside temperature of an airplane at cruise speed or 35,000 feet, you know, above the air? At 35,000 feet, the typical altitude of a commercial jet, the air pressure drops to less than a quarter of its value at sea level. The outside temperature drops below negative 60 degrees Fahrenheit. The standard temperature, I'm reading that in another section, the standard temperature at 30,000 feet outside the aircraft is minus 44.5 Celsius or minus 48 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, when I don't know, was it third, fourth, or fifth grade science class? Okay. Matter of fact, if you boil some water in a pot, and the steam is formed by the hot air coming in contact with the cool air, that's why you see what you see, the steam. Well, at 35,000 feet, it's the same thing. But once again, I did not write this. Okay, we're worried. So let's get back to, so according to scientists, not me, chemtrails is a conspiracy theory. The claim, now these are not my words, I'm reading off this article online. The claim of chemtrails has been dismissed by the scientific community. That's the sentence that I just read. If you want to read along, type in chemtrails or chemtrails conspiracy theory, and you'll be reading exactly what I'm reading. Second paragraph, the claim has been dismissed, the claim of chemtrails, that is, has been dismissed by the scientific community. There is no evidence that purported chemtrails differ from the normal water-based contrails routinely left by the high-flying aircraft under certain atmospheric conditions. Although proponents have tried to prove that chemical spraying occurs, the analysis has been flawed and based on misconceptions. Because of the persistence of the conspiracy theory and questions about government involvement, scientists and government agencies around the world have repeatedly explained that the supposed chemtrails are not normal contrails. The term chemtrails blends the words chemical and trail as contrail, which that's what they really are, blends condensation and trail. History of chemtrails. Chemtrail conspiracy theories began to circulate in the United States Air Force, published in 1996. No, this happened before that, though. Report about weather modification. Following the report in the late 1990s, the United States Air Force was accused of spraying the U.S. population with mysterious substances from the aircraft, generating unusual contrail patterns. The theories were posted on the Internet forums by people including Richard Fink and William Thomas, and were many conspiracy, these conspiracy theories of chemtrails was out way before 1990s, but anyway. There's a lot on this. All right. And I might have to bring on a scientist on here to give, so you can hear it directly from a scientist. But chemtrails, a conspiracy theory. Now, anybody who might have a different opinion, feel free to give us a call at 619-768-2945. And we'll be happy to listen to you. And if you can have some proof along with that, that would be helpful. But the principle, like I say, you can do a little science experience. The principle that when you're boiling a pot of water on the stove or got a tea kettle and you see that that white steam. It's the hot air that hits the cool air, and that's where you see that white mist. Now that's down here in your kitchen. Now where the air is more heated. Now when you go up to, once again, read it for yourself, because you got that hot engine air. Look it up. What's the heat? What's the temperature generated by airplane engines to propel the plane in the air? That's significantly hotter because it's you know what? Let me look it up right now. Temperature of airplane engine. Let's see, how hot does it get? Okay. Well, this is firefighters, okay. When a healthy jet engine runs at a maximum capacity, the engine's combustion chamber reaches temperatures equivalent to 1,400 degrees Celsius, or 2,552 degrees Fahrenheit. So imagine, all right, you've got an engine, airplane engine, 35,000 feet, and it's got to propel that plane, all right, so it's generating temperatures of 2,552 degrees Fahrenheit. And it's pushing that hot air of over 2,000 degrees into the air that's that's at minus 40 degrees, 45 to 46 degrees Fahrenheit. That's what you see. The condensation of that hot air within a matter of seconds, going from over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit into a temperature of minus 46 degrees Fahrenheit. That's what we see. And they're known as vapor trails or contrails, which is condensation trails, coming from typically commercial airlines. So Southwest Air, American Airlines, Air France, Korean Air, Air China, Eurowing, and there's a gazillion other airlines. Air France. Those are the airlines up there. Among others that I'm not naming. That's what we're seeing. It's basically third or fourth grade science. It's not the government trying to kill you. Once again, for those of you who are believe in chemtrails, let's take the emotion out of it. And because what I did was I just went online. As a matter of fact, when I came up with this topic, I wasn't even looking for it, and I just came across it. I said, well, look, because I don't like to get into a lot of people who believe in chemtrails really, anyway, I'm not going to get into that. But chemtrails, just look it up online, chemtrails, and it explains it, and it's a conspiracy theory, where others believe, with a victimhood mindset, that, and that's the thing about a lot of conspiracy theorists, they believe that somebody is trying to get them or kill them or oppress them some kind of way. It's just never ending. If it's not chemtrails, it's going to be something else. But I consider it third to fourth grade science when you're learning about water and the three states of water, solids, liquids, and gases. And that's what the chain reaction that we see the evidence of when that airplane is cruising at 30,000 to 35,000 feet or what have you. Those four engines that are, or whatever amount of engines that are on that particular plane or jet, they're kicking out, once again, the heat that they're generating is over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. But it's pushing the air out into the temperature up in that part of the atmosphere, which is minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's going to create those clouds that we call chemtrails. So for all scientific practical reasons, you can prove me wrong. As a matter of fact, it's not me because I didn't write any of these articles. They're contrails, also known as condensation trails, also known as vapor trails. It is not any government that is spraying something on the entire population. Matter of fact, if you think about it, if this is truly was real, all right, let's say they're spraying something wrong with the entire population, wouldn't everybody be dead, including the people that are spreading it, spreading the so-called chemtrails? Wouldn't absolutely everybody be dead or affected by now? Straighten me out if my thinking's wrong on this. 619-768-2945. I call it my theory is some people missed that day in class when they were teaching about solids, liquids, and gases, and I forgot what grade that was in. Third to fifth grade, somewhere around about that. I know it was before sixth grade. So, and there's a lot of information on it, but it's pretty much cut and dried. And of course, many people who believe in chemtrails, no matter what they read, to the opposite, I also like you to read about contrails, which I've been talking about, but there's an article on that. Contrails, once again, are known as condensation trails, or the streaks of condensed water vapor created in the air by an airplane or a rocket at high altitudes. And there's a period on that. Fossil fuel combustion, as in a piston and jet engine, produces carbon dioxide and water vapor. At high altitudes, the air is very cold. Hot, humid air from the engine exhaust mixes with the cooler surrounding air, causing the water vapor to condense into droplets or ice crystals that form visible clouds. The rate of which contrails dissipate is entirely dependent upon weather conditions. If the atmosphere is near saturation, the contrail may exist for some time. Conversely, if the atmosphere is dry, the contrail would dissipate quickly. It is well established by atmospheric scientists that contrails persist for hours and that it is normal for them to spread out into cirrus sheets. That's cirrus. CIRRUS sheets, like bed sheets, SHEETS. That's what we see. The different size ice crystals in contrails descend at different rates, which spreads the contrail vertically. Then the differential in the wind speeds between altitudes, known as wind shear, results in a horizontal spreading of the contrail. This mechanism is similar to the formation of cirrus unius clouds. Contrails between 25,000 and 40,000 feet can often merge into an almost solid interlaced sheet. Trails have been have a lateral spread of several kilometers, and given some significant air traffic. It is possible for contrails to create an entirely overcast that increases the ice budget of individual contrails and persists for hours. And depending on where you are around the globe, particularly if you're somewhere near a real busy airport, certain times a day, you'll see a bunch of contrails in the air. And other areas where there's no airports, you won't see any. In any event, it's all part of the victimhood thing. But if you say, now, I've read what I read. I didn't make any of that stuff up. I was reading what somebody else wrote, and I took it from about three or four different sources. If you got any other comments on that, 619-768-2945. Let's see what you have to say on the topic of chemtrails.
Do you all believe as a race, I'm not talking about you specifically, but do you believe as a race, African Americans, we play the victim?
Hey, man.
I have a dream.
No. I'm just going to leave that as a one-word answer. I'm not even going to jump in deeper than that. No.
Yeah, I'm on the side of absolutely not, and I will leave it there until somebody disagrees.
Yeah, then I'll jump back in. And now I'm gonna step back.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna say yes.
Let's go.
I'm gonna say yes.
Give me an example.
See, it's a loaded question just because I'm not going to sit here and say every single African-American sides either on the yes side or on the no side.
Mm-hmm.
I say yes to mainly spark conversation, but also I know you're not talking – you said not personal experiences, but that's all I got to go on. I will say, you know, just based on where I am in life, I've gotten a lot of pressure from African-Americans feeling like, you know, I've gotten to where I am because of white people, or you can't speak, you didn't grow up like I did. Like, I came from the hood, you know, I didn't have the same opportunities and privileges that other people had. And though, you know, I believe that to be true, in today's America, I really do feel like anybody has the opportunity to rise to the occasion. Now, is it easier for certain people over others? Yeah, I mean, let's be real, yes. Like, that's 100% true. But, you know, I just keep hearing, like, systemic oppression, this, that, and the third. Like, yeah, we get it. I know. Like, we all know. Like, we all know. But the opportunities are still there. Will you have to work a little bit harder to get to where you want to be? Absolutely. Because of how you look? Absolutely. I'm a testament of it.
Anybody gonna say nothing?
I want to hear this.
I think it's impossible to accuse us of playing the victim. You're talking about a 400 plus year head start for a particular set of people. You're talking about systematic oppression That's what I meant by a post-traumatic state, is we're at this stage in 2020, we're trained to say, yeah, it's unequal, but, and that's just not okay to me. I don't think we should ever get to the place where we just accept inequality.
Correct.
I'm not encouraging stagnation, so I agree with you. I'm not encouraging throwing in the towel like, yo, it's not fair. That's not what I'm saying at all. But while striving to be your best self, you should never accept inequality. And I think that's what we're being trained to kind of just be like, yo, this is just the way it is, and to no longer call it out. And I'm not even saying we got to go picket, protest. I'm not saying none of that. But at least in conversations like this, if we're not going to set a standard, no standard is going to be set. Nobody else is going to stand it. Nobody else is going to set it. You're talking about, statistically, like factually speaking, at the onset of the 20th century, you're talking about land owners only giving land to specific races. That's generational wealth. Yeah. You're talking about bank loans only being given to specific races.
How can you?
That's generational wealth.
Correct.
So we can't. It's not even like this is ancient history. That's what blows my mind. This is recent history.
But he didn't say that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What he said was, "Do we play the victim?"
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very different. You're aware of the things that have happened, but are you victimized as a result of it?
So,
do you say, this is what I can do with what I have been allotted or whatever my place in life is? Are we playing the victim is the question.
Well, I think we have to define play the victim.
Okay.
I think we are the victim.
Because anybody can be a victim.
I think we are factually a victim.
So all races can be victims.
What are we calling playing the victim?
What do you see that as then?
What do I see what as?
Playing the victim, like when you hear that, like what does that trigger for
play,
you?
Play the victim means I'm acting like something is being done to me that's not being done
or
to me.
Or always complaining.
That's what I hear.
Always complaining about our history.
That's what I hear when I hear play the victim. Like you're taking the position that something being done to you and nothing's being done to you. That's somebody playing a victim to me.
This is what I
and
hear.
And that's not the case to me.
This
you know
is what
I mean?
I hear.
Yeah.
Get over slavery. Stop talking about it. We're all equal now. You should be ahead. You should be further than where you're at. Stop talking about the old days. I'm gonna stop right there.
Yeah,
that's what it triggered in my head.
Mm-hmm. So to say like we can't. I don't think you can outrule or like just say, hey, some black people aren't playing the victim because everyone uses excuses.
Correct.
And people can be using excuse playing the victim by whatever excuse they may bring. But like you said, like. We weren't given an opportunity basically to build that generational wealth. And without that opportunity, we don't own anything. So we are having to kind of look for employment like at wherever you work. And even you said there's one person at D1 that's black. And we're 15% of the nation. That's not an accurate representation of America. So therefore, we may not be playing the victim, but we're getting hurt. In corporate America or wherever part of life. That's kind of just statistics.
I'm going to agree with him. I also don't like the term playing the victim because it does sound like you're alluding to something that is not real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
mm-hmm.
if we, I'm not dismissing or negating the effects of 400 years of oppression.
Sure.
And, the things that we've seen and been through. I'm not dismissing any of that. But if we cut it all off and we started with a year ago, we are still being victimized by the stuff you have to see on TV. You have African-American boys who at the age of 11 or 12, all they have ever seen were African-American boys being killed on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they've ever seen. They've not known the life without it because they've watched this happen since they've been old enough to understand.
Mm-hmm.
They are victims. You can go into a grocery store. You can go into an amusement park. You can go anywhere and be mistreated, and you will be a victim today. We're not talking about the victimization only of the yesteryears. You can be a victim tomorrow. And I think if we're all honest, we have been in places where you have been the victim.
That's right.
You were either wrongly accused or wrongly criticized or maybe let's not even make it a negative thing. Looked over for a job unjustly. It's happening. So there's a rationale to the relevancy of still being victimized.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I was to her point, it's not even like this is ancient history. We're talking about 1960s, 1970s. Like the Civil Rights Act was just passed halfway through the 20th century. Like, it's not even hundreds of years ago. Like, there are people alive still, like, you know what I mean, who went through segregation that are still alive. Like, it's not even,
of course.
You know what I mean? It's not even ancient history. So I can never agree that the responsibility is on us to fix the mistakes of others. I could never agree with that. I just can't.
And it doesn't take away, you know, something that I said on the back end of my last answer. At some point, as a family, as a community, you can gather the people you love and say, let's get us out of this.
Correct.
And then you could say, well, we're no longer playing the victim. We took pride and took our own responsibility. And then you can build all that up, and tomorrow you can go somewhere and still be disrespected.
To that point, in my initial answer to you, I said I'm not making an excuse for stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not no excuse to be stagnant.
Yeah.
It's not no excuse to not grind and hustle and get out here and get it. But even if his question is about us as a race and as a culture,
mm-hmm.
and if I get my family together and pull my family up, that's my family.
Exactly.
You feel me?
That's right.
That's not balancing the scales.
That's right.
You know
and
what I'm saying?
It's very interesting. Your point is very, very interesting because I could be an extremely successful black man in today's America and still go somewhere tomorrow and be looked down upon because of what I look like.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, because I remember like Booker T. Washington, like the 1890s, to like kind of offset the Jim Crow laws. He was
not
like,
saying, hey, I'm that old, right? You're not trying to give me some factual.
Right?
I'm the historian.
He said basically,
the migration on that much, though, for real.
I was going to ask you this. So you said basically to offset the Jim Crow laws that were put in place, we had to educate and be entrepreneurs. And you two have both done that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear your experience, because this is, 130 years later for him saying, hey, we need to mobilize on our own, get education, and be entrepreneurs. And that will create our own system of wealth. But, I mean, you're only, like you say, you're only one person. It's hard to pull up a whole group.
Of course.
So I'd kind of like to hear y'all's experience as being entrepreneurs.
You can talk many
options. I was going to let you go first.
Simone owns her own shop, too, so I'd love to hear your
thoughts. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. Listening right now.
Well, like I said, I was kind of raised in an entrepreneurial family, right? I was always taught, don't work for the white man. That was it, right? You get education, anything you can take, put it towards your own business. Put your own 2 feet on the ground. Save your money. You know, get a hustle. You know, he's showing me all these things to do. So it was always in my mind that I had to work for myself. The only way I'm going to come up is to work for myself. So I was never trained to, you know, you're going to get a great education, then you're going to go get a great job, and then you're going to be successful, then you're going to raise a family. That was out. Go get your own brand. Raise your family. Give your brand to your family. Mm. Let them continue that generational wealth. So that's the way I was taught.
Mm.
And that's the way I got to keep it moving.
Okay.
Rephrase the question that you had specifically.
Basically, what I was saying is Booker T. Washington said to offset any type of segregation or discrimination or from playing the victim, we need to educate and be entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Has that experience kind of helped you push through, and have you been able to bring others up because of your entrepreneurship?
Okay, so thank you for that question. I definitely believe that entrepreneurship is freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultimate freedom. I was writing down a thought just yesterday as I was flying through Chicago that one sign of enslavement is a name change. That when people say that you're something, that you're not. So if I was to, like, go and address the same idea with biblical characters, we could look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Mm-hmm.
That was not their name.
Yes.
It was their name that they were given in enslavement. And I can just imagine how they were in a room together, and, you know, one of them yelled, hey, Shadrach, dude, that is not my name. I'm Toby. you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's still like, we have a responsibility to know who we are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have a responsibility to do our due diligence to make our name great. that we, somebody can walk around and call you a liar. Is that who you are?
Yeah.
That's not who you are. Somebody can walk around and call you a thief. Is that who you are? That's the name that the enslavement has given you, right? And so I think that the only way that we can exercise true freedom is in ownership of our stuff, of ourselves, of our actions, of the things that we create, that we can be makers. I think that this is the time for all hustlers to unite, you know, that we all can make whatever we want to be a part of. We no longer have to sit back and say, oh, it's because of what you did to me. Listen, I was molested as a child. So if we want to go back and talk about victimization of the things that people have done to us, we can do that. Or we can rise above it and we can say, well, this is who I am now. This is what I'm going to do. When I started my business, I could not bake, not even out of a box. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any credit. I didn't have any experience in the business. Nobody was going to give me a loan for anything. I was losing the house that the very bakery exists in right now, 11 years later. Because when you put your mind, this is what I was saying earlier, we can be focused on what happened for us instead of what has happened to us. I believe that it is that blood running through my veins that had things taken from her. You know, it is that blood running through my veins that said, no, you can't come in here. It's that blood that is running through my veins that made my great-grandfather one of the first to be able to do, to sing where he sang. And those are the things that I'm using today to get me from where I am to where it is that I want to be. And it's those things that I'm giving to my children and saying, this is what you have. We're not talking about what we're not. We're talking about what we are. Mm. And I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about what we are, what are we doing right as a culture that's setting up our children to have wealth? What are we doing right as a culture to where our children's children will know our names? Are we doing things right as a culture to change the narrative of our finances of our children?
I can only answer that as an individual and then see what we and my wife also try to do and spread, right? You know, we're all about giving back. We're all about showing and proving. You know, I want to be that beacon that the young brother say, you know what? I want to do what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? I want to go out and get my own wealth. I want to start my own business. And if I wasn't there, maybe he didn't see me. Maybe they never came to my restaurant. Maybe it's just me, you know. But when you're there, we're going to teach you. We're going to give you tools. We're going to teach you about customer service. We're going to teach you how to run a restaurant because that's what we have to do. It's my duty. I have to teach. And again, I can only speak about me. I can't save the world. Yeah. I can save the people that watch me. I can save the people that touch me. I can save the people that work for me. I do my best, right? You know, so, you know, I just look at it as you have to be that beacon, right? You got to be that shining light to change everything around you. You know, be that leading example.
But I don't think that's anything new under the sun, what you're saying.
No, it's not new.
I think that's what this community has been. You know, it has been a community of people who say, I'll teach you how to do this.
What community are you talking about?
The Black community. I have plenty of examples in my life of people who stuck their foot in the door so that I could pass through.
That's not always out the way we do things, though. You know.
All right, just a little bit on victimhood. Anyway, the title, and we can go trending with anything you guys want to talk about today. But we started out with Chemtrails, The Real Story. So by just doing a teeny bit of work research online, and if you got any comments on victimhood or chemtrails, 619-768-2945, press 1. We'll get your comments on the air live right now. We did some background on chemtrails, and we found out the correct name are contrails, C-O-N-T-R-I-A-L-S, contrails, which is for condensation trails, and we took the temperature of an airplane engine, which is over 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit, and at 30,000 to 35,000 feet above the ground, the outside temperature surrounding that airplane is anywhere from minus 40 degrees to minus 46 degrees. And when that extreme hot hits that extreme cold, you get condensation, just like you do when you're boiling a pot of water on your kitchen table. And you can see that steam. Well, that's what we see. Let's go to the phone lines right now. 217 area code. Your mic is open.
No, just that Family Guy reference. Condensation. Yeah, no. I'm sorry. That was actually very funny to me. No, the stuff that they're dropping out of the airplanes, a lot of the stuff that people see is literally, like you said, contrails. It's not actually anything. It's literally dispersed fuel in fluid that they had to drop because they were moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, it's exhaust is waste. That's one way of looking at it.
Well,
and,
no, it's not exhaust. It's not exhaust. It's I guess the best way to describe it would be liquidized coolant in a mist that's put out through propellers. So it's put out in a mist. I don't know if that. I mean, you guys would have to actually go to some kind of airport and like actually see what the planes do to have a better understanding. I don't know.
Well, now here's what I do understand. All right, we know those airplane engines, which are propelled by jet fuel.
Yes, sir.
Those temperatures are very hot. Over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay, and we know what's real cold is minus temperatures, up at 30,000 to 35,000 feet. Below zero.
Yeah,
okay,
yes, I agree with you entirely, yes. Those engines are running hot, those propellers are moving quickly, you're up
mm-hmm.
in the air 35,000 feet, it's negative, let's call it conservatively 40 degrees Celsius, negative 40 degrees
okay.
Celsius.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean
too much. Yeah, I agree
with
you, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you, and that's what I'm saying is that... But the reality of the situation is they're burning so much fuel, and any time they pass through a cloud, any time they pass through, I don't know, any kind of condensation, it's going to, I don't know, mist. It's going to mist behind them.
Yeah,
I'm not saying
yeah,
I'm right. I'm not saying anybody's wrong. Yeah, I'm just saying that's the reality of the situation. I mean, that's what I've understood it to be.
Well, like I said, if anybody's got, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying at all. Like I said, if you go near any airport, now some air, particularly a real busy airport. You'll see certain times of the day when I guess they're doing a lot of takeoffs in the morning. What have you.
Yes, sir. You'll see this stuff out of JFK and stuff like that. You're not going to see this
right.
stuff in Hobart. You're not going to see this stuff in Hobart, Tasmania, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, that's great that people are seeing stuff and they're asking questions. It's just not a lot of the
well,
time.
Well, like, I'm interested that you mentioned JFK because that's New York City. And New York City's got, they have JFK Airport. I've flown out of there about twice. You got JFK, You also have LaGuardia, and right across the river you have the Newark Airport.
Yeah.
So that's quite a bit of flights that take off there during daylight hours, and even into the evening, because a lot of European flights, depending on where they're flying from, a lot of European flights take off around about 7 p.m. or somewhere around that time, depending on where they're going. So you're right.
Yes,
you will see probably more contrails in those areas than, like you said, Tasmania. Well, I guess anywhere in Tasmania, actually.
No, there's only
because it's got
only
a small, very small population of flights.
Yeah, but that's the entire game. I mean, Western Australia, you're only going to see these things in Perth. You're only going to see this stuff in like Adelaide, or you know, I mean, I'm just saying like all over the
talking
world.
Talking about like places like
stuff.
Sydney.
Yeah, Sydney. I guess you would see it a couple times. It's not going to be so clear as it would be in Perth, because Perth is the only city on the western coast of Australia. I'm just saying, yeah, but this is
right.
I'm
you're
saying,
right.
This is stuff that people need to understand. You know, Hobart down in Tasmania, there is only one city, and it is a very small city. I guess New Zealand, if you want to take it over to Wilmington, you know, I don't know how to actually convey this outside of that. In America, it's very difficult to understand this because we have a bunch of cities all over the place, and the only place that you could actually understand this is in a distant location with a little bit of solitude, and I guess that would be Perth.
I'm thinking of a visual right now, and because Australia is practically the size of the continental United States, but we just don't have the density. We don't have the population. I mean, Australia doesn't have the population of the U.S., nor do we have the airports.
No, America has all the airports. They have like 25 million people, and Perth is a city in the Western Hemisphere. There's no other city. It's almost impossible to get anything driven from, you know, from Adelaide, from Sydney, from the eastern part of the country. They have to have literally everything shipped in on ships. So that's where you would see something. I'm not saying I'm right. Just also not saying I'm wrong, because that's and I was training to be an air traffic controller, so like I've seen a little bit of this stuff before. But yeah, man, I'm just saying that's
well,
I'm
glad you brought up the statistics. Like say Australia, which is an island continent, is about the size of the continent. What's the word I'm looking for?
It's like two-thirds of the United States.
Yeah. But they compared to, you know, but like you said, they have a population of about 25,000 people.
And
that's not a whole lot of people.
25 million.
Cause, how many?
25 million.
All right, 25 million. All right. Metro area New York City runs about 18 million? Metro, New York. Hold on, let me look it up right now.
Yeah. No, it's about that now. And Chicago has less than 3 million people in the city, but plus the metro is like 10 million. So, yeah.
All right,
yeah,
so if you take Metro New York City and Metro Chicago, or Metro New York and Metro Los Angeles, okay, there are more people in those two metro areas than the entire continent nation of Australia.
Yes, sir.
With in New York City alone. Now, we're not talking about New York State, but New York City alone, you got you named them. You got JFK, you got LaGuardia, and across the river, you've got Newark, their airport. That's three airports.
Well,
in a small space.
That's mixing match in New York and New Jersey. But yes, sir. No, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a small amount of
it's very close. Yes, sir. I understand that.
Like in Chicago, you've got Midway and O'Hare.
Yes, sir.
And
yeah, that's
a
right.
Lot,
yeah.
And a lot
it's
of
like
these places, they also have
away from each other.
Right. They also have in these towns or these big cities, they also have smaller municipal airports that are not used for commercial purposes. So, but you're right. If you go to a smaller area around the globe, you will not. Because I've been to some semi-remote places.
I'm just saying that the sightings seem to be more prevalent in major cities. You know, there will be people sitting outside of an airport, and they'll see this stuff, and it just tends to be that way. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm also not saying I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right. If anybody's got anything to add to the conversation, 619-768-2945. It's, but, you know, I would also ask people to, you know, look up how clouds are formed. And you brought up a very good thing on population. Because I would love to
see some camera footage out of Shanghai's airport or, you know, Hong Kong. That'd be interesting to see that. We just don't have that.
And or Beijing. There's a lot
yes,
of traffic
sir.
That goes out of Beijing, China.
Or Tokyo, even. I would love to see Tokyo's airport.
Yeah, Tokyo's got a lot of, that's a high-density city. And they have a lot of, matter of fact, you know what, largest airports, well, of course, a lot of your largest airports are around densely populated area. Not all of them, but. Airports.
I'm not saying I'm right. I'm not saying I'm wrong. I'm just saying there's a correlation when it comes to a lot of this imagery.
True.
So, yeah. So that's all it is for me. You know, there's a correlation.
Okay.
If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm more than happy to be wrong. I just need to see somebody prove me wrong.
Well, with the chemtrails thing, I'm also trying to find somebody that would, I mean, all right, who is this affected?
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to interrupt you, sir. Didn't they publish something in the 90s that they were actually dropping chemtrails? And did they admit that they were literally dropping some kind of stuff in the air to make sure that it rained over, like, Qatar or something, to make sure that the fields were being...
I haven't heard that one, but it's a whole. I'm not a chemtrails specialist or expert.
Yes, yeah, I would struggle to find one person that is. But yeah, no, I thought that was like something that was in conversation, so I was just gonna bring
right.
it up. To
you know what's interesting? I'm looking at the largest airports in the world and.
Heathrow,
I guess this is for
JFK,
I guess this is for
LA.
Traffic. No, this for proper total passengers. The busiest airport is number one is out of China.
Yep,
and they
that
have
makes
over
sense to me.
Yeah, matter of fact, out of the top 10 busiest airports in the world. Eight of them.
They got like
are
five in
out
China.
Of China.
Yeah. Yep.
No, hold. Excuse me. Seven of them are out of China, and I've been to one of them. I've been to the one in Beijing. But in the United States, the number one airport as far as traffic is out of Atlanta, and then you have they come in at number two. Also in the United States, ranked at number four is Dallas-Fort Worth International. I've been out of there several times. And then the third largest in the United States as far as passengers would be Denver International Airport. O'Hare comes in at 13.
Isn't Denver that conspiracy theory place where, like, they have all this stuff underground and stuff?
I don't know. I've heard that out of, New Mexico or even Nevada? Could be Because out in Colorado, once you get outside of Denver, Fort Collins, there's probably another two cities I'm not thinking of. This Colorado's kind of, you know, death in their mountains. In any event, thanks for the feedback on that, though. Yeah. Now, for people that are just tuning in, we have been, the title of today's podcast has been Chemtrails, the Real Story. What we did was we went to online sources and we found out, and you can fact check us on this, the correct name, Chemtrails, C-O-N-T-R-I-A-L. C-O-N, that means it's a combination of condensed trails. They're also called vapor trails. And they're generally formed between 30 to 35,000 feet in the air. Let's take an example, a real-life example. You're on a Southwest Air or Delta or Air France or whatever. So you get up to the cruising speed of 30,000 at 30,000 feet to 35,000 feet. You know, the pilot takes off the, turns off the, what do you call it? And actually, this probably starts at below that. But anyway.
You're talking about the cruising altitude.
Yeah, the cruising altitude. And so you've got an engine. Anywhere from 2 to 4 engines on that plane, that jet. And the temperature of the engine is over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So as it pushes out air at over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, the temperature surrounding the plane, okay, pushing you forward, is minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit. When you have that extreme hot, reach that extreme cold, you form clouds, also known as contrails, not chemtrails. This is not L.A. speaking. This is what is written online.
And if you watch those, they dissipate pretty quickly. I'm sorry to interrupt you, sir. Go ahead.
No, you're right. They do typically dissipate pretty quickly. Now, in certain areas, and I'm glad you brought this up, in certain areas of the globe, you'll see more of these contrails than you'll see in up. And you gave a great example. If you're in Hobart, Tasmania, which is below Australia, mainland Australia, or in some place like Perth, Australia. And Perth, Australia is the only major city in Western Australia. You're not going to see contrails or what some people call chemtrails, all right? If you're living in a place like New York City, not New York State, you know, where you've got you got two distinct airports. You got your commercial airports, which in New York City is, you got JFK, you've got LaGuardia, and right across the river in New Jersey, that's the Newark International Airport. And you also have municipal airports, but that's not for commercial use. So you have heavy traffic. Matter of fact, let me...
And act like a moment you're not going to see that plane flying out of Buffalo over Canada, and that stuff's going to stick around for like 5 minutes. And
right.
It's going to form a cloud. Yeah. No, I get you, buddy.
Right. So, matter of fact, I'm looking on here. Anyway, but... It's not the government dropped whatever the well, you know what? on Wikipedia, and once again, this is not LA speaking, what they have labeled it is chemtrail conspiracy theory. Now, that's what is named. That's the way they name it on but they break it down, but also recommend that people read about how clouds will form. And this, and to really simplify it, is I think it's like whatever you were taught in third, fourth, or fifth grade, when you the lesson on solids, liquids, and water, solids, liquids, and gases. Okay, you get some water, you boil it, and then it when that hot heat of the water gets to a certain, it rises, and then it turns into steam. It's the same principle up in the air with jet planes and the extreme below temperatures, that and they form contrails, C-O-N, not chemtrails. Is not the government. And you know what, if this was true, wouldn't everybody be dead by now, or diseased, or have three heads or whatever? I'm just asking. Okay. 619-768-2945. We do have somebody with their hand up. 407 area code, your mic is open.
Good morning, LA. This is Beata with Soul Purpose Healing. And sorry, I don't believe that there are no such thing as chemtrails. Answer me this question. How do you explain days when these what you call contrails are not going in a straight line?
No, it's not what I call contrails. I read the article that somebody else wrote.
I'm saying, okay, there's been years and years of information coming out about chemtrails. And the question I have for both of you is, how do you explain when these lines are not going straight, they're crisscrossing each other? You can look up in the sky on some days, and these lines are like checkerboards. They're not straight like coming from an airplane. They like have a pattern of crossing each other, which airplanes don't do. They don't cross crisscross like that. They go in one straight direction. But there are many days when you look up.
Well,
like,
airplanes
wow, look at
go
that.
To different airplanes go to different directions.
Well, ma'am, can I ask you a question?
Each other. I'm talking about crisscrossing each other. In one, like in a matter of 5 minutes, these planes
yes.
have flown in four different directions to create a checkerboard in the sky. How do you explain that?
And they're
that,
going
ma'am?
To different
yes,
places
ma'am.
On the planet.
No, no, no.
Well, go
no,
ahead, sir. You were
not
answering her question.
Hold on. You know, I had a question for her. Ma'am, you're talking about Los Angeles, like the Los Angeles area. What side of Los
no,
Angeles?
No, I live in Florida. No, I live in Florida.
Florida,
I've
okay.
Many years
even
I've
better.
Seen that.
Okay, but this is what you need to understand about there is a regulation when it comes to air traffic control. Man, I was actually about to get into this stuff. They were trying to drag me to radar school. So what needs to be understood about air traffic control and the way that planes fly, what part of Florida?
Since near Orlando, all around the – I've lived in the Orlando area for over 20
okay.
years.
Yes,
all
ma'am.
Around
okay.
Central
You're
Florida. Central Florida.
So Central Florida. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. What is important to understand when it comes to airplanes is that the only rule that they have to abide by is keep every airplane 2 miles away from any other airplane. So if a plane is landing in Tampa, a plane is landing in Miami, the only thing, even if they're flying right over each other, they have to just keep 2 miles of distance. And I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't be too difficult to create a crisscross, especially if somebody's taking off from the Keys.
I've flown out of name the airport, but out of Orlando several times. All right. On one flight, I was going to Washington, D.C. So from Orlando, we're talking about we're going north or slightly northeast. All right. Another time, I flew from New Orleans. I'm going west in another direction. And the plane before me, we're talking about planes, like he just mentioned, 2 miles apart. And when you got a lot of planes stacked up, those planes are not going in the same direction. They're going in different directions. That's from any airport. No plane, no series of planes are flying in the same direction. We got north, east, south, and west, and that's the way it runs. Out of any airport, planes are going to, I mean, you can have, I remember I was in, Beijing. About four years ago. I was out of Beijing. Those planes fly out of there it's almost like an assembly line. But they're all going in different directions. And those hot engines, once again, those hot engines, this is a third or fourth grade experiment. On your kitchen, in your kitchen, when that water, you're boiling, and it turns, when you see that steam, why do you see that steam, which is really just a miniature cloud? It's because it's hitting cooler air. The same thing happens 10, 20, 30,000 feet above this guy. I mean, up in the air.
Yeah. No. Yeah, if you see a checkerboard, there's a good chance that either it's somebody landing or somebody way above you. There's no way that it's like
some
random person.
And that's another point you bring up. Because at any airport, you've got one runway or maybe a couple of runways that are for takeoff, and that's going in one direction. And then for the ones that are landing, it's in another part of the airport. So just in that alone, you got a crisscross section right there. But you got north, east, south, west. Not everybody's flying in one direction. And you've got people going north, east, south, west, international.
Yeah,
it's all kind of cross patterns.
Yeah, I know. That's my entire point, is that if you're outside of a city, 40, 50 miles outside of a city, you look up in the sky, you see a crisscross, you see a checkerboard, you see a chess game being played in the sky. Yeah, there's no way, that's not actually a thing, because people are coming and going into the city, outside of the city, especially in Florida. They're coming in from Cuba. They're coming in from South America. They're coming in from all over the world. It's not actually that complicated.
I agree.
If you saw that in Montana,
you
and I'd be having a conversation.
No, because the state of Montana, or the state of Alaska, or the Dakotas, or someplace like Vermont, they simply don't get that much air traffic. It's as simple.
I know
that.
Exactly. Yeah, I would. Yeah, if you said you were living in like Helena, Montana, and you saw a checkerboard in the sky, I'd be like, maybe I should go over to Montana and start taking pictures. But yeah, if you're doing that down in Florida, no, people are just coming and going. That's all it is.
Orlando, in the state of Florida, you got Orlando, which has heavy air traffic. Miami, which has heavy air traffic.
Tampa.
Tampa, and then Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine was flying back to Australia. They came in through Jackson International Airport in Mississippi. And if you've ever been to Jackson, Mississippi, it's real small. You'd be surprised that they even had an international airport. But they have one. But in a place like Jackson, which isn't that big, I don't recall seeing any contrails out of the airport. And then there's some places where in or around the globe where they might only have a handful of flights that come in and out of that airport on a weekly basis. But a place like Orlando's got international traffic coming from six continents on a daily basis.
There are pictures on the internet, and social media all over the place, that have shown President Bush, Trump, President Trump, inside of one of the so-called chemtrail planes with the tanks. They were showing the tanks that they use to spray in the atmosphere. So how do you
now? What are they spraying?
I don't know exactly. That's been around for so long. I don't pay too much attention to it anymore. That people were sharing these photos of President Trump and I don't know who the other president may be inside these planes, giving a tour of the tanks inside these planes that spray these chemicals. What they're spraying is sure is available online, but I've seen many pictures like that.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Can you snap one of these photos, like screenshot it, send it to this gentleman so he can turn that into like a photo for him to post as the the next photo for his episode.
But what I would like to also know is now what's the because we live in a cause and effect world. What's the result? What's supposed to be the end result of spraying chemtrails on the general population? What's supposed to be the end result?
No, it's more about weather manipulation. That, I think, has been the conclusion that why they were spraying all this stuff. They were trying to manipulate the weather and clouds and the atmosphere. I don't know. And the conspiracy theory has always been more like, well, they're trying to poison their population. I don't know if you can believe all that, but it's definitely been, in my mind, about changing the atmosphere so they can manipulate the weather, something to that effect.
I've heard three different takes on that. It's trying to ionize the atmosphere so that it will rain. It was like basically putting something up in the air so that it will attract water so that it'll rain over a certain piece of land. Or something is formed overhead and it's going to rain down kind of like an invisible smoke. So people inhale metallic stuff, you know. I mean, you're talking about war games at this point. I don't know.
Well, now I've looked up something you said, Viata. I'm looking at it right now. It's called weather modification.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The act of intentionally manipulating or altering the weather. The
mm-hmm.
most common form of weather modification is cloud seeding, which increases rain or snow, usually for the purpose of increasing the local water supply. Well, I'm gonna read about that.
Yeah.
In the military, they have also storm prevention.
Mm-hmm.
If you Google photos of chemtrail planes, there's dozens of them with the tanks and everything. Just Google photos of chemtrail planes, and there's one actually of President Trump walking through one of these planes, and Snopes.com, which you can't trust anymore, is the source of a fact check, the Trump tour chemtrail plane. So you can go there yourself. And NBC News, here's another one. There's tons of contrail science, aircraft photos. There's tons of photos. Do you believe in chemtrails? I don't even know which one to start with. But just go, if you want to see the pictures, go to photos of chemtrail planes. And they got the tanks inside of these planes showing the tanks that they use to manipulate the weather. Let's just say that. And then in their devious agendas, it could be, if they believe it's harming people. They have, in some areas, they have measured these chemical presence in landscapes and soil and found that they were higher in certain areas where they believe they were spraying or manipulating the weather. So this all kind of, this has been going on for so long. And I heard recently that they're no longer even spraying the chemicals that program has been complete or discontinued. So you hear all kinds of things, but as long as I see these crisscross vapors in the sky. I'm wondering what they're doing up there other than flying passengers.
Ma'am, do you think that our government is capable of being that smart?
Our government is a bunch of gangsters. What do you mean? We have the industrial military complex.
No, ma'am. That's not what I asked you.
Okay, that's smart, you said.
Yes. Do you think our government is that smart and that devious that they could actually concoct something like that? And why would
they
do that?
Absolutely. I wouldn't put any evil plan against the government that the government couldn't come up with at this point. They came up with this plandemic. Hell, that's the most devious Twilight Zone episode we've been in.
Hold on, ma'am. Do you know what the trivium is?
The who?
The trivium.
The trivium?
Yes, ma'am.
No, what is that?
That's who, where, when, how, and why. Like, that's the way that you solve. That's the way they used to solve crimes back in the day. You have to.
Oh, the 5 W.
Ask,
that's what we used to call.
Yeah, you have to answer why. What's the point of these people destroying their own citizenry when they're depending on the citizenry to reelect them? Like, I don't understand that. Can you explain that to me?
Control. I don't know if you've ever heard Bill Gates' speech. It's a live speech that he did with TED Talk that explained why they want to reduce the population. Too much carbon dioxide in the air, all kinds of reasons. Most people believe they want to it's too many people to control, basically. So the agenda with Bill Gates, which he said it on TV live, on video live, is to reduce the population with vaccines. That was his equation. If you bring enough vaccines in and you do blah, 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 then we'll reduce the population to this number, blah, 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 blah. So that's not a conspiracy theory because it's a live video that he made that everyone has witnessed. They've probably taken it down.
No, ma'am. I'm not challenging. I'm asking. Okay, so Bill Gates had something that he said about population control using vaccines at some point. What was it, like
right.
A year ago, 6 months ago?
No, it's been longer than that because I saw that video maybe about 5 years ago.
Okay.
That video is kind of old now, and it maybe have taken down, but enough people have seen it to know that what his agenda. He's a eugenics person. His father was a eugenics man. He's a eugenics man. They want to weed out the weed eaters or the people who don't have any importance in life, as they would put it. So he's into eugenics. That's normal. That's a normal pattern for him to think that spreading vaccinations in Africa and all over the planet will reduce those people that he thinks are we don't need on the planet. That's pretty much common knowledge. That's not a conspiracy theory.
But
no, man,
you have
I'm
less
not
people
talking.
On the planet. You need people.
Actually, statistically, only a very small handful of people ever do anything of value. So wouldn't it be more beneficial to have more people on the planet? I'm just saying, this is something we should look forward to.
No, ma'am.
I'm not. I know. I'm not talking about you, ma'am. No, I'm just saying, you wouldn't want to kill children. You would want to have more people because statistically, we're not going to have another Einstein for another, 200 years. So, yeah, I'm just saying that the more people that we have on the planet, the higher our ability, the higher our chance to have somebody along the way to say something or do something of value. Yeah. I'm not saying any of us are going to do something of value.
That's the common sane mind way of thinking. But these elites who are producing AI, artificial intelligence, can see eliminating the population and replacing those children you're talking about with those great minds, replacing them with their own egomaniac creations of artificial intelligence. So, yeah, some people would agree with you, of course. Most of us would. And then the elites is like, no, we got a better plan. We're going to replace the creator, the divine plan, and put AI intelligence in there and do what they do, white supremacy, whatever they have in mind, and they think
what,
their plan
what?
Is better.
What? Okay. Other than the white supremacy nonsense that almost came out of your face, I appreciate your mind. You have a good mind, ma'am. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I mean, there are leaks in this world who think that the races, certain races, are better than others. So they're promoting that theory to reduce the population, especially in Africa. They're working real hard to kill people, reduce the population.
Have
Africa,
you ever been to Africa?
No, my ex-husband went there. I don't need to go to Africa. I went to Australia. I'd much rather spend time in Australia than Africa.
Australia was cool too.
I'm just saying
it's beneficial for everybody, especially Americans. You see, the problem with Americans that I see is that we have the desert, we have the mountains, we have the forest, we have the rivers, we have the oceans, we have all the lakes, we have all this cute nonsense that you will literally be displayed all over the world. We have it all right here, and unfortunately, that has caused a lot of Americans not to travel the world. Most Americans don't even have a passport, and I'm personally offended. Americans need to travel the world. But
I agree. But
yeah, they need
that
to
ain't
travel.
Gonna happen.
No. Well, I don't know. Maybe if they get hungry.
Well, if you look at it globally, most people, now, different countries have different habits or whatever, but most people, you know, their world is about 60, what I call a radius of 60 minutes from where they lay their head at night. So with you take a person that lives in, let's take Chicago, or they could live in,
no, it's not Chicago. You're talking about Manila. Manila, maybe.
Where they go worship, where they work, where they meet their mate or spouse or whatever, it's all within a 60-mile radius of, or 60-minute radius. You know, most people are just there. Now, Europeans I know Germans in particular, every chance they get, they're out of Germany and they go vacation wherever.
Yes.
But the United States,
that's a European thing. The Europeans will travel all over the world. I don't care where you're from in Europe. I don't care if you're a Spaniard or a Frenchman. I don't care. No, you'll travel. But Americans, we have all the terrains in our own country, so they tend to travel inland. They're like, yeah, if I want to see a desert, I go to Arizona.
Right, and then some people like, oh, if you can imagine this, there are people that live in New York City. They spend their whole lives in New York City, and they've never gone to New York State. Somebody that was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, for some reason has never traveled 7 to 8 hours away in the same state and been to Buffalo, New York,
that's
or Rochester, New York, or Niagara Falls.
Like, that's like a 3.5-hour drive, and I've actually made that drive. Yeah, I know, but Well, I was on a show the other day, and I was actually talking about that. I was like, city people, I don't understand. Like, if you were from somebody else, like somewhere else, I don't know. If you were from, like, Columbus, Ohio or something, and then you moved to New York City, you have a chance. But if you are from New York City your entire life, if you're from Los Angeles your entire life, I was like, dude, there's no redemption. You don't know how to do anything. You don't know how to grow food. You don't know how to change a tire. I saw a report.
I agree.
Yeah, I saw an article like 4 years ago where these kids didn't even know how to change a light bulb. I'm just saying, this is a reality of the world. We have become so comfortable. And what happens after we become so comfortable that we don't expect to have any hardships? A terrible collapse. Every single time. It happened with the Greeks, it happened with the Romans, it happened with the Germanic tribes. Yeah, we keep doing this stuff over and over again. We have the ability to learn from our mistakes, but we just don't.
True, true.
We keep doing the same stuff over and over again.
I agree. Today's Thursday. Viata, what do you have on for tomorrow's female solution?
Okay, tomorrow on Health and Wellbeing with Viata, we're talking about obesity, the challenges and the victories overcoming obesity, and what Ayurvedic medicine can do in this area. Ayurvedic medicine is an Eastern philosophy of understanding your body type and the foods that will balance you and the foods that keep you out of balance. So we're going to introduce Ayurvedic philosophy principles, and Zelda, one of our female solution hosts, will be one of my guests to talk about her challenge with obesity, and maybe I might have a gentleman come on as well talking about their challenges with overweight situations. So tomorrow at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Female Solution, and that's 515-605-9325. And I, you know, talking about travel, I totally agree that that's something so many Americans don't do and take advantage of, which would, I think, expand their wisdom and their education and their communication and relationships with everybody. I have traveled all over the world, and you come back to the United States and you just have a whole different perspective on relationships and everything after you've been to Australia, China, Israel, all these places that have different cultures. So, yeah, there's a question mark as why. I think part of it is parents. Some of the parents in America are stuck on the idea that traveling isn't something that's important in their child's education, where as my understanding from my growing up was, I quickly learned that traveling is a very important part of my education. And then my children have traveled to Dubai, to all kinds of countries, and Hawaii. And so maybe it's about the education of the parents that determines whether they prioritize travel.
But you also have a lot of people.
Safety.
Not just leisure.
Safety is the reason that American parents don't want people to travel, especially their kids. I understand
safety?
That completely. Yes, absolutely.
Did you say safety? Why safety?
Because if they're in your front yard, they're safe. You know they're safe. If they're in Mozambique, they're not safe. They're not in a place that you can protect them. Yeah, I know, but that's the problem with Americans. We don't send our kids out into the world. We don't allow them to build their character by going out and experiencing other places, other ways. And, man, when I came back to America, I'm not going to lie, I kissed the ground.
A lot of Americans, not only Americans, but for the sake of this conversation, something that you, Viola, that we talked about when we were up at the 4 Acres, comfort and convenience. You take a place like New York City. New York City has got, matter of fact, anybody on this line or listening, you can go to New York City, and if you learn the system up there, you can basically live rent-free. Now, granted, you might not want to live that lifestyle, but, I mean, they've got all kind of so-called local government programs where, you know, if you might have to live in a shelter, and might have to deal with, you know, the comings and goings of shelter life. But you have a lot of people that live in New York City for the comfort and convenience. I mean, you don't need a car in New York City.
You just heard this gentleman say, "Don't go to New York City," right, everybody? don't go to New York City.
I'm one of these, and some people. I got a friend of mine that lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Now, I like remote areas. I like getting outside of a major city. All right. However,
yeah, you know where you go. You go to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. You don't go to Dallas, Fort Worth.
But he thinks that there's safety in numbers, and you know, he lives in Mesquite, Texas, which is right outside of Dallas. But I'm from the school of thought, no. Get away from that. And get in a remote or more remote area. But if you're going to get in a more remote area, there's less comfort and convenience. No, there's not going to be a Walmart nearby. No, there's not going to be a McDonald's nearby. No, there's
not
going to be a safe,
this.
I mean, a bus or
I'm not going to try to speak for this gentleman here, but if he's telling you that you I'm saying me and this guy right now are not telling you to buy 40 acres in Alaska.
Unless you have the skill set. You need the skill set. If you're going to do that, you need the skill set to do that. And in the mainstream educational system, including a lot of private schools, they do not teach the basic skill sets to live on 40 acres somewhere in Alaska.
Oh, school
or Montana,
doesn't teach kids anything.
Or even here in Florida.
School isn't about teaching kids anything. It's teaching kids how to work in a factory somewhere. No, that's not what school's for.
Most schools are indoctrinating kids to obey the authorities. That's what school is about these days.
And
yes, ma'am.
And work in a factory.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
I mean, you think about
that's
it.
What
they do. Because you're from Chicago. A lot of people that moved during the Great Migration 1 and 2, they moved to Chicago. They moved to, Michigan. The Rust Belt State.
Detroit.
Okay.
No, you say the city, Detroit.
Mm-hmm. They were factory jobs. You know.
Yeah, then that came down crumbling. That was terrible. Yeah, no. Sure. But, yeah, no, the migration, well, I don't know. I mean, you don't want to talk about it.
Well, now people are moving in different directions. But
yeah, I know. But, no, but right now is actually a very strange time, and I'm happy that I'm alive for it. States are actually advertising in other states to come back. And it's like in Florida, they have, like, billboards, like, come back to California. And it's pretty much the governor holding up that boombox, like, baby, come back.
You know, there's a billboard, I understand, in Atlanta. The former police chief in Atlanta, she got a position somewhere up north. I forgot the city. But that city is recruiting policemen in Atlanta to come. She's somewhere up north, Indiana.
North Dakota.
Someplace.
North
yeah.
Dakota. Yeah. You know why?
Why?
Because Atlanta
does
not
appreciate.
North Dakota's
got a small population for one.
I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about a small population of anywhere. I don't care if it was freaking Wyoming. Atlanta, Miami, New York City, Chicago, I don't care. They don't appreciate their law enforcement officers at all. They kill them on occasion for no reason. Yeah, it would be great to work as a law enforcement agent, a police officer, a sheriff's deputy up in North Dakota. Why not? Why would you risk your life in Chicago, Atlanta, Miami? Why would you put up with that? It makes no sense. No logical person would
you
want to be
you make
a
point. I know a guy in Germany. He's a police officer in a small town in Germany, and he said he wouldn't want to be a police officer in the United States. Just
yeah.
For the reason that you just talked about.
I respect him for no reason. Yes. Yeah.
Because
in the town
that he's in, the street cops doesn't have. They don't have they're not armed or anything
they don't have
like that
guns.
Because it's not
they don't
that
have
type
guns.
Of.
I know. Europe. I know Europeans, my buddy. I understand
right.
Europeans. Yeah, they don't have. They don't have pistols.
Yeah, it's
they
totally
wear,
different environment.
They wear right little highlighter vests and walk around acting tough. Yeah, I get what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why
if I had to be a police officer.
That's why America is Europe 2.0. This is why we're better than them.
Well, I'm going to wrap it up for
not
today.
Wrong.
Thank you all for calling in. I'm going to wrap it up about 4 minutes earlier than usual. Everyone have a good rest of the day.